Hello and welcome to the Inclusive Startup Playbook, the new podcast mini-series brought to you by Sifted and Morgan Stanley Inclusive Ventures Lab, the firm's in-house startup accelerator. I'm Anissa Osman-Britton, Startup Life reporter at Sifted, and this week I'm joined by Jane Lucy, the CEO at Purse, Bikesh Sachdeva, the co-founder and chief strategy officer at Purse, and Jaipal Naidu, the co-founder and product and operations owner at Purse. We've been exploring the best ways to build an inclusive, resilient, and sustainable startup. This week, we've got three guests from the same company on the show because we're exploring how to manage trust in a startup. As a Startup Life reporter, I encounter this topic a lot when interviewing people for the newsletter. It's become clearer and clearer to me that the foundation of a resilient, successful, and inclusive company is trust. And that seems to be at all levels of a company, from co-founder relationships, top-down relationships like manager and employee, and peer-to-peer communication. Practically, we've found some of the same advice comes up time and time again when it comes to building trust for your startup in the early days. For example, if you don't want your internal communication to break down, frequent and transparent communication, even when it's bad news, is really needed. Although some of the operators we've interviewed have said that oversharing can often be a distraction too. So you need to find that middle ground where people have all the information and context they need to do their job without there being any gray space for rumors. We actually have a great Startup Life article on this, which we'll share in the show notes after. For those of you scaling, we also wrote a great piece about internal comms during an acquisition. I do think a lot of those points are relevant at all stages of company building too. We'll also throw that in the show notes. Another example is having regular touch points with your team to communicate. This can be company monthly all-hands meetings or individual employee one-to-ones. It is important to remember here that meetings need real preparation to be useful and to build trust. They're not just time-wasting moments. When I interviewed Graham Olcott, the author of How to Fix Meetings, in our Startup Life newsletter, he suggested the 40-20-40 method. This is where 40% of your attention should be on meeting preparation, 20% on the meeting itself, and 40% executing the takeaways from the meeting. Basically, 80% of the energy required to make meetings successful is actually needed before and after the meeting itself. So be mindful of how much time you're actually putting aside for meetings and make the ones you do have magic, as he puts it. A final example of building trust is to create regular space and time for employees to ask questions to leadership. It's a great way to promote transparency, and it also improves respectful relationship building between all levels of the company. So a quick overview about Purse. Purse produces real-time data on energy, carbon, and cost for grid-connected assets such as buildings and vehicles. So let's try and get us onto the same page. We are talking about trust. What is the definition of trust for you and for you as a company?
I think for me, trust is about reliability and honesty. I suppose it can be also summarized as a belief and confidence that what you think will happen, or something even better will happen. So, I mean, certainly between the three of us, you know, our relationship is very much grounded on transparency and the fact that we know that each other will do what we expect them to do. And that also comes back to complementary skill sets without wanting to jump ahead. But I think, you know, in terms of sort of giving a coherent basis for trust in Purse, you know, it very much is underlined by our personalities and skill sets. It really helps for us to be able to understand what to expect of each other, to know that we're going to perform in the ways that we expect.
And how does that sort of expand out to the wider team? How does that trust play out in the whole sort of company?
I think we are people that lead by example. I mean, we are still a relatively small team. So there's six of us here in the UK, and we have an offshore team of 14, which report directly to Jaipal. So he can talk about that aspect of the business separately. But in terms of the six of us here in the UK, I mean, we have daily catch-ups. So it's very transparent what's going on in the company on any given day. There's that ability for all employees to speak to us collectively and very directly so that we don't have any communication issues, and we have that reliable time the employees can be guaranteed that they'll have that face time and exposure.
And while we're here sort of setting the context of trust, what is the downside of not having it? Why is it that trust is so important to you as a value in your company? What can go wrong if trust doesn't exist?
I think you risk losing alignment. And I think also, if you think about the nature of a startup, you tend to be taking more of a risk. You might be putting in more time than what you might put into a different job. You might be taking a greater financial risk. It might be a combination of that. So whenever you do a sort of a cost-benefit analysis, you always want to think that you're still on top, that belief in that outcome is still there.
You talked there about managing employees and Jopal obviously working with the offshore team. So let's talk about internal communications, ensuring that the team knows what's happening, ensuring that you're being transparent. How do you do that and what channels do you use to make that happen?
First of all, our challenges is even a little bit more exaggerated in the sense that because we've obviously got globally distributed teams, they are part of our organization. But to be clear, all the 14 members that Jane referred to, all of them are in different cities, right? Like we are. So they're all working globally from different locations. So in terms of communication, it's even more challenging given the fact that there isn't a team that sits together to communicate with each other. So in essence, for us, that communication then boils down to how we are effectively informing and keeping each of us informed about what we are planning to do. So what we have done is, in order to break down this kind of potential silos that can actually happen, is we've divided the teams into different squads. And what we've done is, think of a Venn diagram that you at least have one thing common across the different teams. So we've tried to place our team members in such a situation that there is at least an overlap of team members within each of those squads, which helps them, first of all, understand what are the best practices each of the team is following. What's happening from one squad then gets transferred over to the others because they are able to actually take from their own experiences of working within a squad and put it in place in a different squad together. And apart from that, we have to be a little bit more dependent on getting the teams together forcefully to a certain extent to come together and just have the chat, open chat amongst themselves so that they can keep themselves informed. I understand our responsibility as someone within the organization who have full information about whatever is happening across the organization. But we personally have empowered our teams to essentially talk to each other so that the information kind of flows through. And of course, you've got all the tools that you basically need for communication to flow through, like Jira. You've got your internal comms tools, like we've got Zoom and Teams or Google Meet, whatever is available for the customers. But more importantly, the other aspect of our communication is the written aspect. So what we have then focused on, apart from having the conversations flowing between the teams, is to instill that habit of documenting everything. Given the fact that we don't have personal interactions on a day-to-day basis where people are coming together, it becomes even more important that the written aspect or the documentation is then available for someone to then view it in the time that suits them. But having said that, we still have some gaps and we still keep working on bringing all the teams together.
I think you touched on a really interesting point there about as you start to scale, there are a lot more different touch points. You as founders no longer know everyone one-to-one or get that one-to-one time. So I'm really curious, from a founder perspective, what are you doing to ensure that middle management are sort of replicating those beliefs and values that you have?
Just to be absolutely honest, that's one of the reasons why we don't have middle management. So everyone, in fact, we've got a very, very flat organization. Everyone talks to everyone in the sense, and obviously at this moment it works because we are 21 people in total. But we do understand that when we kind of scale up, it is by the design of the scale itself that there will be some layers that will probably come in between. And in terms of eliminating at this moment the challenges of communication, because it's such an open channel, our technical teams, or essentially our product engineers, have the direct line to all members of our team. So which is, we ensure that we have at least a daily catch-up on all the product-related activities with me, Vikesh, and our head of engineering and everyone. So they basically come together as a team. They explore all the interesting aspects at least once in a week about all the future gazing things. So in a sense, there is that communication that we are in a position to continue because we are small and we are tightly knit. But then going forward as we scale, I think for us, it might be something that we'll have to create a way of working for ourselves where we as the co-founders don't lose touch with our teams. It's more about us not losing touch with the teams rather than the other way around, which is the teams potentially might be okay to work individually, but we want to be very close to all of them.
And what about that trust as you scale between you three as co-founders?
I think each one of us has a different perspective, but then one of the reasons why we align with each other is because we trusted in the vision to begin with. So we believe in what we are doing and we believe that we are making a difference. And that's absolutely the number one thing which keeps us aligned. And to a large extent, what also helps is that we've worked with each other in the past. So that's a very, very easy way to build the trust.
For me, and you know, this is obviously my second startup that I've been involved in starting, and I've worked in other technology companies. And I think the real difference in the three of us is that complementary skill set piece. I don't think you could have designed a better setup between the three of us, to be honest. So, you know, in terms of the data piece and the fact that we are unlocking data in the energy and carbon markets, and that's not really been done before, you know, comes down to Vikesh's background and his experience and having built most of the data flows and systems that exist. And then we've leveraged my background as a lawyer in terms of negotiating new use cases and permissions for the data. And then Japal is Mr. Execution, which, you know, it really is a dream team. You know, we're doers, and so it's easy to trust people when you continue to see delivery and performance day after day.
I presume, obviously, you've heard of the team works because it was based on trust between each other as well as a singular sort of a vision which we focus on. But I suppose for me, it's not about all the things that go well. It's having the trust in the situations when things are not going well, I suppose, is what has stuck us all together. So I think the more important thing is, yeah, when things are going well and everything, yes, you trust each other and you align up and we believe each other's doing its job perfectly. But when things don't go, then you stick to each other is when you actually build up the trust on things. It's that simple for me that way. I've worked in bigger organizations, probably I've managed teams of thousands of people. Yes, the time constraints do happen, but I think you can still always have that relationship down to the last member of your teams. It's up to you to manage it, to still be able to do it, even if there would be middle management in the future. Yes, you have to set an example as the co-founders of the company. You always have to take out the time to meet up with the freshers who join in. We still would want to work with them and talk to them.
Because I want to pick up on the bad news part or bad things at startups, because we all know it's a roller coaster and it's going to happen. So how do you do that primarily as a team? Practically, how do you ensure that trust and communication exists between the three of you? And then also, how does that extend then to the wider team?
I think you've mentioned the right word. One is the communication. I think the bad news will happen. There's no point hiding it under the carpets or anything. So the quicker everybody knows about it, the quicker you can try and resolve it or control it or manage it, whatever works out for that specific situation. And I think having the trust and belief in the other person that it will get fixed or whatever has happened, you can move things from there on. There's no point dwelling on it or if something has gone wrong. It's coming together at that specific point and supporting the person in a way to say, yes, it's happened, fine, let's resolve it and then find a way to move on from here and hopefully not repeat it again.
Yeah, given the fact that we've get the product engineers from diverse backgrounds. So, you know, each one's personality is very different, right? So you've got people who are extroverts who are really great with communication, people who are introverts who probably do lots of work, but then they're not able to communicate. So first of all, enabling them to communicate with each other is the one aspect that is extremely important for us. And why I say this becomes quite important in terms of either delivering good news or bad news is that when the news is kind of delivered through their own performance, which is easily measured, and the rest of the team are also able to understand why certain decisions are being made on the basis of this information, which could be, in a sense, for example, performance of a person, which has kind of resulted in certain things on the product, which have led to, let's say, a penalty of some sort. The fact is that because it's an open communication, people understand each other and they're actually able to give the information, share the information, and potentially share the bad news openly in an environment where they've been able to communicate in the past and exactly in the same way they communicate the great news as well as the bad news together. From our team perspective, what we've also done is made the objectives measurement quite simple in the terms of the most bad news are given to people when it comes to their performance or when it comes to us taking the right decision with respect to an individual. So there we've kind of kept it absolutely simple and very clear in terms of the objectives that each one of them has to achieve. So when someone doesn't meet those expectations, it's very clear and evident to them. And it's very clear and evident to the rest of the team as well as to why certain decisions were taken. Because there is lots of transparency in terms of how the performance gets measured. So in that sense, the communication about good news, communication about bad news, and the decisions that we take are easy for us to explain to everyone because it is transparent in the first place itself.
Jane, as you mentioned, this isn't your first rodeo. You co-founded a company before called Labrador, and you were also at FinTech Revolut. And I'm really interested, what have you learned from those experiences about trust, especially in a scaling and much bigger company that you've brought over to Pearce, or maybe that you've left behind and don't want to replicate at Pearce?
I think sort of clarity on roles and responsibilities, you know, there are still some similarities between how we operate as to what it was like to be within one of those product teams. But even still, you know, and particularly at an early stage startup, you know, you wear multiple hats. And so there is, you know, more risk of sort of crossover between doing different things. So I think, you know, it does come back, you know, back to that communication aspect and being clear with each other about roles and responsibility aligned to skill sets, and includes being honest about limitations just as much as the areas where we think the other person has got, you know, their best place to be able to take something on, because it is just so important. I mean, it does come back to team and it comes back to delivery and execution, and that comes back into your skills to be able to do that.
And because just to follow on from that, as you mentioned, you were also in a much bigger teams and managing much bigger teams. What have you taken or trying to leave behind from those experiences?
I think one of the things I've hated the most is the matrix structures as the organization gets bigger and the hierarchical nature. So hopefully we should be able to avoid having big matrix structures and hierarchical structures arranged in. And I think being able to be transparent with every level of the teams in a way is probably one thing that has worked for me in the past. And hopefully that's one thing I'll keep propagating down.
Awesome. Well, Vikesh, Jane, Jaipal, thank you so, so much for your time. It's been such a pleasure.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
If you want to hear more about the inside working of Europe's startups, explore the latest workplace trends, and read helpful resources, you can sign up to our Startup Life newsletter. And make sure to tune into our podcast next week, where we'll be discussing how to create a sales strategy. Thank you to Morgan Stanley for sponsoring this podcast series. Apply now through March 15th for the 2024 Morgan Stanley Inclusive Ventures Lab, an accelerator for tech and tech-enabled startups to access capital, resources, and connections to help further develop and scale their companies and to advance a more equitable investment landscape. You can learn more at their website, morganstanley.com/MSIVL.